It is time to head out to the Toyota of Hollywood Hotline. Shop hundreds of Toyotas indoors. One of America's largest showrooms at Toyota of Hollywood on 441 between Hollywood and Sheridan.
All right, thank you, Woody. As we go to Mike Florio from Pro Football Talk this morning. Mike, good morning. How you doing there, sir?
Joe, doing great, buddy. How are you?
I'm doing great, and really enjoyed reading all your stuff that you guys had and listening to you guys on some of this stuff, including one of our favorite topics here, the New York Jets and the Aaron Rodgers thing. So my first take is, and I wasn't there like everybody else, everybody's just trying to guess a little bit on this, there's no way that owner of the New York Jets spoke to Aaron Rodgers the night before and didn't mention something about what he was going to do. There's just no way they talked about a sprained ankle.
Well, first and foremost, we're dealing with a guy who already has undermined his own credibility with the word game that he played in 2021 when he said, yeah, I've been immunized, and he knew what he was doing, and he's smart enough to manipulate and twist words in a way, leave things out, creative omissions to avoid the truth. And here's the bottom line, because he's very offended, Joe, that we would suggest he had anything to do with it. Let's separate whether he ordered the code red. Let's say he didn't. He could have stopped the code red from happening. That's what's been obscured by him huffing and puffing about resenting the suggestion he ordered this. If you make a big enough of a stink about that, no one ever asks the question, did you, could you have, would you have prevented this from happening? That's why I was disappointed yesterday with his press conference, because nobody asked him a very simple seven-word question. With no preamble, no wind-up, seven words. Did Robert Saleh deserve to get fired? And I think a lot of truth would have flowed from that answer if it had been teed up that way.
Hey, Mike, you've been going back and forth those New York media guys after calling them out for the questions a little bit.
I wish they would treat Aaron Rodgers that way. Use some of that fire on the subjects of your beat, guys. And I'm not mad. I understand when you cover a beat, like, nobody wants to be the jerk. Nobody wants to be the one who's asking the tough questions. If you do, it's harder to get interviews. It's harder to get access. It's harder to get scoops. They start favoring the others who play along. It's a sad commentary of the way teams manipulate the reporters who cover them. But at the same time, in certain circumstances, you got to throw caution to the wind. You got to try to get to the truth. And when I watched that press conference yesterday, I was just disappointed that no one was willing not to check, because you don't have to be disagreeable to ask a pointed, curious question. And there's a lot of curiosity percolating in the aftermath of what happened on Tuesday. I was just disappointed by the showing collectively. And it's funny, you know, they can gang up on me and make ad hominem attacks and try to dismiss me. I didn't see any of them accurately address the merits of my point. I didn't see anybody say, you know, you're wrong in suggesting that we failed to take advantage of the opportunity to ask this guy some real questions and just get to the bottom of what his involvement was or wasn't in the firing of Robert Saleh.
Yeah. Nathaniel Hackett right in the middle of this whole thing. And by the way, after all this is said and done, they've decided to move on from, although it's a strange one, he gets to keep the offensive coordinator title, but he'll have absolutely no power for play calling or final say on the offense and the game plan. What'd you think about Nathaniel Hackett? They were, he's staying around. He wants to be part of this. He doesn't care. He's a team coach. He's a team guy. What'd you think?
Well, I think the way that Jeff Ulbrich explained it, it suggested that basically there's nothing left for him to do, and he had every right under his contract to walk away, take his money, and not be part of the
right
team. And they had to sell Aaron Rodgers on that. And what happened yesterday cuts against the theory that Robert Saleh told the coaching staff on Tuesday that Nathaniel Hackett was going to be demoted, which happened, and that Aaron Rodgers caught wind of it and then mobilized and got Robert Saleh fired. The fact that Nathaniel Hackett ended up on the outs anyway suggests that's not how it went down on Tuesday. But regardless, I want to see how the offense is different, especially as it relates to the freedom that Aaron Rodgers has at the line of scrimmage to call whatever play he wants to call. Because if you read the Ian O'Connor book about Aaron Rodgers, and remember when Matt LaFleur got to Green Bay and they had this very public, and I think it was orchestrated by Aaron Rodgers, back and forth about how much freedom he would have to call audibles, Rodgers is still going to do what he wants to do. Rodgers has reached the NFG, no F's given, phase of his career. He's going to do whatever he wants. They're not going to cut him. They're not going to bench him. And the question becomes, will Todd Downing be able to control him any better than Nathaniel Hackett could?
And you know the other crazy part is the Bills are at New York playing for first place in the NFC East this Monday night. Like, you can't make all this stuff up. And speaking of that, I want to ask you about Josh Allen and that lot of people going, wait a second, the concussion thing we've seen down here and the hit he took on the turf to get right back in the game. What'd you think about that and the way it was handled by the neurologist?
Well, there's a disconnect, I think, that gets discussed very rarely. We saw it with Tua a couple of years ago, between a checklist that is treated as an annoyance by the player and the team, and let's check those boxes as fast as we can so the player can get back on the field, versus healthcare. It is a very real healthcare moment. Most of the other injuries, unless it's a serious neck injury, a spleen injury like Chris Sims had back in 2006, the commotio cordis that DeMar Hamlin apparently suffered on the field, usually it's not a healthcare situation. With a brain injury, it's a healthcare moment. So are you providing proper healthcare if the guy is back on the field 2 minutes and 30 seconds of game time later, 6 minutes and 6 seconds of actual clock time later? Is it proper healthcare if someone's offering him smelling salts when he comes out of the blue tent? So it creates a lot of suspicion. And the NFL, I think, would tend to be a little standoffish and defensive, as we would expect them to be,
right,
because their core concussion protocol is under attack here. But, you know, there was a time when the late John Madden was trying to get the NFL to adopt a very simple proposition: when in doubt, leave them out. And if there's any doubt a guy had a concussion, he should be removed from the game. There was at least doubt that Josh Allen suffered a concussion. And it just feels like there's a mechanism that kicks in, almost like what we saw last Thursday night when the Falcons are trying to spike the ball so they have 1 second left to kick the field goal to force overtime. Like, everybody moves faster because we got to go, we got to go, we got to go.
Right.
Even the officials, we got to go, we got to go. I feel like that same, we got to go, we got to go, we got to go, happens when a guy's being evaluated for a concussion. And Julian Bales, one of the doctors at the forefront of all this, told me years ago, the only way to properly do a concussion evaluation is in the locker room, take the shoulder pads off,
yep,
sit down on a comfortable chair or couch, have something to drink, and then let's see if this guy has a concussion. It's not the kind of medical diagnosis that should be done in a nylon blue tent in the crucible of 70,000 screaming people with all the activity and everything else. That's just not a proper way to determine whether or not someone had a concussion. But the NFL doesn't want to keep its best players out of the game for 10, 15 minutes of real time, especially if it ends up they didn't have a concussion.
Right. So speaking of that, we've got Tua about ready to come back. I think you can read between the lines it's going to happen. Most likely Arizona, he's eligible to come back from IR after the bye week, and we play the Colts and then back here. What's going to be the reaction when Tua comes back? What do you think the national reaction will be?
Well, we collectively have the attention of goldfish, so I think a lot of people will have moved on from how we felt 4 weeks ago today after Tua suffered his latest concussion. Now, we all should be on the edge of our seats wondering when the next one's going to happen. My concern has been, Joe, and I probably mentioned this last week, there's just a growing sense of urgency to get Tua back, that everything will change. The offense will dramatically improve. It'll be 70-20 again if Tua's back. I don't know that that's the case, but I just think that's a tough spot to put the kid in. And again, checklists versus healthcare. And as a patient, doctor-patient situation, wouldn't the advice be, let's just step aside from the thing that is drawing you back into the thing that can give you more concussions? It'd be different if he had suffered some fluke injury like what happened to DeMar Hamlin. This is one of the risks that's right at the heart of the radar screen of the things that can happen to you playing football. So I'm concerned about the circumstances, and I wonder what the league's position on all of this is. Last week, Alan Sills, the league's chief medical officer, said during a conference call that it's up to the Dolphins doctors and Tua. But the league has a role in this. There's an unaffiliated medical procedure where it's not tied to the team, but it's still tied to the league. I really am curious as to what the league wants here. I think at some level the league probably wants him to not play again this year, because if you have another incident, it's just more fodder for people who don't want their kids playing football, and it's more coverage that makes it to the Today Show and to Nightly News and all the things that put negative attention on the NFL. So it feels like that train is rolling, and I hope they make good decisions, but we have to accept the reality that more concussion, just because he didn't have any in 2023, the nature of the game, the nature of the position he plays, he's going to potentially have another one, and then what happens?
You know, Mike, the other problem we've had here now recently, because now I'm starting to say it too, is how do we stop him when he's obviously leaked some stuff out that he wants to come back and he plans on coming back from his camp. So how do you stop him? Because everybody's going, if the guy knows everything, he's been told by all these great doctors, and he's been told, like, we don't know for sure. He goes, well, good, I want to come back and play. How do you stop him?
Well, Joe, I've said this many times. Our inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness includes within it a right to screw up our own lives if we want to. And Americans take many risks that are far more pronounced than the risk that Tua takes by playing football for a lot less money. Anybody who's driving around on a motorcycle without a helmet is taking a far greater risk every day than Tua's taking when he plays football. People jump out of airplanes. People go rock climbing. People do risky things all the time. He's got the right to do that. The question becomes, at what point does the medical apparatus of the National Football League step in and say, you are not allowed to play? And I think that's what the NFL is kind of stuck with here, because you don't want to be in the business of telling guys they can no longer play if they're healthy, if they're cleared, if everything's fine. But how many concussions are too many? How many times does a guy assume the fencing posture?
Right.
Joe, you know, before Tua had the fencing posture happen twice in 2 years, how many times do we even see that result of a serious brain trauma? I remember it happened to Case Keenum in 2015 in a Rams-Ravens game, and he wasn't removed. But we've learned a lot since then. And that fencing posture is not something we see very often. So,
yeah,
if he was my son, I really wouldn't want him to play. If he was my son, my brother, my cousin, my friend, whoever, anybody that was connected to me, I would say, I really don't want you to do this, and I'm going to be freaked out every time you're out there on the field. But he fundamentally, and you're right, he's got the right to do it as long as there's a doctor who will sign off on him playing.
I had a couple more things for you, Mike, and I'm sorry we got going so long, but it's been obviously a hot topic about getting him back, and we're going to be better when he's back, and it's not in the situation at 12 points a game. But officiating, man, we've been doing these games, and Jimmy Cephalo and I have been going, man, the officiating is taking forever on penalties and everything else to get these things done and right. I feel like we've added 20 minutes onto a football game. Have you felt that, Mike, with all the calls that are made and getting these guys together and huddling up for, seems like, a couple of minutes before they make it official?
I'm willing to tolerate delays if the goal is to get everything right. Now, if the delays are coming from incompetence or just confusion in the administration of the game, that's not good enough. You need to have people who can administer things efficiently. But I've got no problem making sure that we get all the calls right. The integrity of the game and the integrity of the wagering on the game calls for it. Like last night, you know, I think it was just dumb luck that they didn't find in the Amazon truck the angle
right
that showed the punt touching the finger of Dee Williams, the Seahawks punt returner, until after the review had completed. But I've always been a proponent in getting it right. I don't think that we should just shrug and accept human error, because if we accept human error, we leave the door cracked just a bit for human corruption.
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. All right. Last question for you, and I'll let you on. I appreciate all this stuff, Mike, this morning.
I'm happy to talk to you. I enjoy it. I look forward to it every week. This isn't a burden for me. We talk about football, for crying out loud.
Yeah, that's true.
I'll stay on to your heartbreak. I don't care.
Hey, the quarterback rookie class has ended up Bo Nix, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, all winning records. Hell, Jaden Daniels, they might be playing one of the best games this week that the NFL has to offer. If you're buying Washington at 4-1 right now, playing Baltimore, all winning records. What have you thought about this quarterback rookie class so far?
Oh, I think it's great. And the NFL put out a stat on Sunday. I haven't had a chance to get around to writing about it yet because the Jets situation kind of turned our
yeah,
list
a little
of
bit.
Stories to get to on its head. 10 wins through 5 weeks by the three rookie quarterbacks, the most rookie quarterback wins ever, except for the strike year of 87, when everybody was a rookie quarterback.
Right.
And all the Stavs were playing for that three-week window. So that's really the aberration. This has been a special year. And, yeah, so far so good. Now, Drake May is going to drag down the winning percentage, I think, now that he's starting. But yeah, hey, I think Jaden Daniels is special. And I think Caleb Williams has the potential to be. But, yeah, I talked to Jaden Daniels after they beat the Browns last week. Because if you watch him run, it looks like he has a higher gear. And I asked him, do you get a little higher gear? And he says he does. And that game on Sunday, I think it is. It's one of those where when the schedule came out, you don't give it another thought. 5 weeks in, oh, wow, Commanders-Ravens, week 6, 1 o'clock Eastern on a Sunday. Oh, man, that's the game to watch.
Yeah, it's Jaden Daniels completing, what, 77% of his passes, second in running as far, or just behind the greatest running quarterback in the history of the game, and the guy's going to be playing against just great, great stuff all the way around. Mike, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. You take care and have a great weekend.
Thanks, Joe. See you, buddy.